Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The annual Mac World Expo ended yesterday in San Francisco, and the biggest story was that Apple's great impresario, CEO Steve Jobs, wasn't there. He's been looking gaunt in recent photos, and this week spoke openly about health problems. Jobs and Apple have become icons of American innovation in consumer technology. Now, the economy needs innovation all over, and some of those iPods and iPhones are looking like baubles of the bubble. This hour on Point, Apple, Steve Jobs, and the state of American innovation. We've got big thinkers with us this hour. In a few minutes, one of the world's great computer scientists, co-founder of Sun Microsystems, Bill Joy, will join us from his high-tech yacht in the North Sea, no less. Right now, we're joined from Las Vegas by Kara Swisher, co-executive editor of the Dow Jones website All Things Digital. She's been in Vegas attending the annual Computer Electronics Show. Kara Swisher, great to have you back. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. And with us from Palo Alto is Stephen Levy, senior writer at Wired magazine. He's been covering the Macworld conference in San Francisco, just ended yesterday, and has covered Apple from its very early years. Stephen Levy, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks, Tom.
First, just a flavor of Macworld without Jobs this year. How big a hole, or does Apple have such a head of steam that it doesn't matter?
Well, it was definitely a void. People line up overnight. They come from all over the country to see what they call the Steve Note, which is Steve Jobs' annual unveiling of new stuff from Apple. This year, Vice President Phil Schiller filled in as best he could. He did a good job, but it wasn't Steve. And it became so clear that there was going to be a void that Apple took the really unusual step of releasing a statement from Steve Jobs on the eve of Macworld saying, hey, I don't have cancer again. Mm-hmm. He had cancer a couple of years ago and then announced he was cured. He said, I don't have it. There's apparently serious complications from that surgery he had. He says now it's been identified as a hormone imbalance and that there's a way to treat it and it's going to get better. And I think he did this just to lighten the mood a little and so people wouldn't be saying, oh my God, you know, is were we ever going to see Steve Jobs again?
That note, that statement was a little vague. The concerns didn't go away, but of course, you're right. Phil Schiller was there, Apple's vice president for marketing, standing in with the keynote address, that long shadow on the stage, the man in the black turtleneck who, for the first time since 1997, wasn't there, Steve Jobs. But Schiller was nothing but upbeat. And let's listen for just a minute, Kara, Stephen, to the Apple VP standing in for Jobs.
Last fiscal year, we had the biggest year in the history of the company in Mac sales. We sold 9.7 million Macs. We're so proud of that. Everyone worked so hard, and we did it by growing over twice as fast as the rest of the industry. And that's because we have the best product line we've ever had for the Mac. Up and down the line, amazing, great, beautiful products. The hardware, the Leopard, Mac OS X operating system, all the amazing applications, it's just tremendous.
Not Steve Jobs, but Phil Schiller standing in there for Jobs at Macworld. Of course, out in Vegas, where Kara Swisher is at the Consumer Electronics Show, another message going on. Steve Ballmer, Microsoft CEO, held court, unveiled his company's new operating system, Windows 7. He told reporters there he's not worried about Apple's increased market share, that it's all grist for the computer industry mill.
Yeah, you got to look at it this way. You know, this year, maybe there'll be, what, 10 million Macs sold and 300 million PCs or something like that. I think people are pretty interested in the future of the personal computer.
No doubt, and a lot more technology, American technology as well. Kara Swisher, what about where you are at Vegas at the big Consumer Electronics Show? This economy's got to be crunching there with or without a Steve Jobs issue.
Well, you know, I mean, I think the technology industry is actually relatively healthy compared to, say, the finance industry or many other industries.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's an economic downturn, but people are still buying these things and using, especially not necessarily buying so many devices, but they are using the apps and all sorts of things that are putting on these smartphones, especially, for example. That's a really bright spot, the mobile economy. And I think that it's something people are still interested in and is not going to back down. It's a part of the economy. People are moving online. They're using these devices. It's an inevitable shift that's happening in our culture. So, you know, I think the economy, when it returns and, you know, whenever it does, the technology industry will remain one of the strongest and absolutely in no need of a bailout.
Yeah, and thank heavens for that. Everybody else seems to need one. But
they wouldn't take one.
Well, and good for them, but when it returns, it's kind of a big...
I bet they would.
Well, yeah, maybe offer us something, make us an offer. Stephen Levy, what about what we are seeing, what we did see at Macworld this year from Apple? I mean, do we still see that big-time innovation going on? No major iPod or iPhone or equivalent there. What was the news on the innovation front there?
Well, Apple did really the skimpiest lineup of introductions in many a year at Macworld, but I don't think you could pin that necessarily to say that they're out of innovation. There was a subplot to Steve Jobs is not showing up is that Apple, for some reason, decided that they don't like the Macworld Expo, which is run by a different company. They don't like the idea that they have this annual deadline to come up with their new stuff. They want to come out with it maybe at a better time of year, maybe during the holiday season instead of just after it, or wait till the product's ready and do it in a way where they're in total control. So the big thing they had was a new version of their consumer media software, and they had a 17-inch laptop. Not a giant breakthrough lineup, but we could expect, I think, to see some new stuff this spring.
When you wrote recently about Apple for Wired magazine, and you're turning your memory all the way back to the early 80s, where you were doing a cover story, or Steve Jobs was pushing for it to be on the cover of Rolling Stone, and you had this kind of hipster outlaw sensibility at Apple that was there and then maybe diminished when Jobs went away. He brought it back, but now it's hardly an outlaw. It's a big, big player. I mean, do you still feel that kind of urgent urge for innovation at Apple? Do you still feel it across Silicon Valley in California? Is it still, you know, high and proud?
Well, the edges aren't as rough as it used to be, and you really couldn't call it a skunk works like the original Mac project was when I did that story for Rolling Stone in 1984. But Apple lives and dies, really, by innovation. As Steve Ballmer pointed out, even though it's growing faster than anything else, and it's the 25th anniversary of Macintosh this month, and it's just amazing that normally a computer product that age is not only in the grave, but well decomposed, it's doing better than ever, the Macintosh. And it's growing out of a niche into, you know, something a little bigger. And in some areas, like colleges and things like that, is the dominant computer. So I think they have to keep doing that. It's like a shark. They have to keep innovating just to live. And they've gotten pretty good at it. With the iPhone is the most recent product in a lineup that's expanded from the Mac, the iPod, which I'm looking forward to innovations in that. I think it's time for that. And the iPhone is something that now they've got the platform out there. Everyone's very excited about the little applications they buy. And if you don't have much money in this economy, a lot of these little applications are free.
Kara Swisher, all this caught our eye because we've got such big economic problems at the moment. And you say, well, when the economy returns, technology will return with it. But I guess I can imagine a lot of Americans thinking these days, you know, who's going to pull us out of this? I mean, banking, we're bailing banking out, not vice versa. Technology and Silicon Valley have been a huge job generator for the last several decades. Do you see the dynamism in American technology innovation today that could from the, sort of right out of Silicon Valley, hook up an engine to this economy and save it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, no question. I mean, think of the things they've given us this year. I mean, the whole apps economy right now where you launch things from, these very smart phones. I mean, I hosted a panel here about what everything was going to be like in 2025 with a group of big thinkers from HP and Qualcomm and various places. It was a really interesting thing. But one guy brought stuff from 1993, which was 15 years ago, and what we weren't using the internet in 1993. There was no commercial internet at all to speak of. There was, you know, they brought out a Newton, which was sort of a version of the iPhone in a weird way, which was from Apple. They brought out all these products, and the number of things we've been doing in that short amount of time is really quite astonishing. And even this year, I mean, the idea of, I mean, everything, Apple sort of exemplifies that, but this idea of a smartphone that you carry with you that has all these very powerful applications is an important conceptual idea because, I mean, this economy, we're not going to be in the car industry. We're going to be in the information industry, and that's where our jobs, you know, are moving. The other ones, I guess, the green industry, the energy industry, sort of innovations in industry. And so we have to have an area like Silicon Valley, and it's not just in Silicon Valley anymore, where we're innovating in all these areas, healthcare, green technology, continued communications tools, the ability to use the internet to do presence. One of the things they were talking about was 3D, and in 10 years, you would have meetings where there are 3D figures with you. Well, that has all sorts of implications about travel, about saving, you know, all sorts of resources. And I think Silicon Valley will remain our absolute, one of our strongest and most important industries. There's no signs of it doing a car industry thing at all.
Thank heavens. We need a lot more from it than that. We're going to dig in with Kara Swisher, Stephen Levy, and Bill Joy when we come back after a short break. Here's Tony Bennett at this week's Macworld Expo performing the Cy Coleman classic, The Best Is Yet to Come. Let's hope so. This is On Point.
The best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're going to drain the cup dry.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Apple, Steve Jobs, and more broadly about American innovation. We've been joined by Stephen Levy, senior writer at Wired Magazine, and he's been at Macworld all week in San Francisco, joins us today from Palo Alto. Kara Swisher from Las Vegas is here, co-executive editor of All Things Digital, Dow Jones website devoted to technology, the internet, and media. We're going off to the North Sea and Bill Joy in 1 second, but let's listen for a moment just first here to Steve Jobs at last year's Macworld conference, giving his final keynote address there. Nobody does it better.
Today, Time Capsule, companion product to Time Machine. Keep our data safe and backed up. Software upgrades for both the iPhone and the iPod Touch. iTunes movie rentals. And a completely reinvented Apple TV where you can order movies right on your widescreen TV. Unbelievable. And the MacBook Air. All of this in the first 2 weeks. And we got 50 more weeks to go. So we're pretty excited.
Steve Jobs, Apple CEO at last year's Macworld. This year, a no-show, but sending out a note on his health. Stephen Levy, Kara Swisher are here. We're joined now by Bill Joy on board his, eco-friendly yacht, the Ethereal. He and his wife have there. They're doing trial runs in the North Sea, now docked as we speak, in the port of Harlingen in Holland. He's a partner at the venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers, co-founded Sun Microsystems, and was for years chief scientist there. Bill Joy in the North Sea, welcome back to On Point. Very good to have you with us.
Thank you.
First of all, just on the Steve Jobs front, I'm sure you've been following that this week. What are your thoughts about Steve, as he says, struggling with some health issues, off stage at Macworld this year? What about the weight, the importance of Steve Jobs and the health problems he's looking at?
Well, Steve obviously provides great leadership for Apple, but there's a lot of great creative people at Apple, and so I think they're going to do just fine.
How do you see the broader American technology industry right now? We've got problems in so many sectors of the economy. People aren't buying a whole lot of things, including a lot of technology, I guess. Do you see technology innovation as a major engine for pulling us out of this economic slump? Or does it have to wait for the economy to come back to kick in strong again?
Well, I work at KP on green technology. We've been making investments there for a number of years, and we see lots of opportunities for creating new jobs and new fuels, from waste biomass and new battery technologies and all sorts of green technologies. And also, we also invest in life sciences. There was news today about how Tamiflu doesn't work against the flu. We've got an investment in a company that has a new antiviral drug that we were developing mostly for, you know, for the bird flu,
mm-hmm.
but which also works on, you know, it doesn't have the resistance that Tamiflu does. And we also invest in information technology. We're doing a lot of things with Apple on iPhone applications. All these areas, we're very excited, and we see lots of new companies and new ideas and room for economic growth.
But you, your colleague there at Kleiner Perkins, John Doerr, venture capitalist out of Silicon Valley, was in Washington this week. And here's you know, here's the message: delivered a stark warning to Congress on Wednesday that the United States is on the verge of being left behind in the green tech revolution. That's a pretty big wave to, not to catch, Bill Joy.
Sure, the Germans, for example, have been subsidizing solar energy there. As the state of California has. But more broadly in the United States, we've seen much stronger policy support in Europe than we have in America. And we have to invest in R&D, and we have to support our technologies. And if we don't, the great companies of the green revolution will be elsewhere.
Kara Swisher, what's your sense about the headiness or opposite thereof in Silicon Valley these days? Is there still the feeling that this can be the center, this can be the comeback locus for the next economic surge? Or is new competition abroad and changed economics at home change that optimism?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, every time they have one of these bubbles, you know, a lot of crazy valuations goes along with it, which is annoying. But the fact of the matter is, I think people are still investing. I think they still feel confident. Obviously, there's some the idea of layoffs, of cutting back, about taking a minute. But that happened before in Web 1.0. And in that case, it was a lot of silly companies being created. A lot of the companies being created now are by no means silly. They're really, you know, they're very interesting. They're useful. They're consumer-centric or they're green-centric. You know, in fuel cells, in solar, in wind energy, at least that. I mean, this has to be developed, and it should be developed by the United States, because, again, the United States remains the leader in a lot of innovative technology, even though they are investing, especially in energy elsewhere. And so, you know, the idea of if we created a way to not use as much energy, that's a whole new industry to move forward. I mean, it's the next. It has to be the most next important thing. What about innovations in healthcare and sensing in the idea that we could know a lot more about our environment and what people are doing and about patterns? I was talking to someone from I think it was HP or Qualcomm or Intel, and the idea that you could know, you know, you can't stop the weather, but you could know when exactly it was going to rain. Because of heavy computing power, because of sensors and things like that, that's a very important thing, you know, especially with tornadoes and all sorts of things. You can prepare much better. There's all kinds of ideas as you move forward that you can think of where it would take us into another thing. Now, the technology is not going to be everything. There's got to be other industries in this country, but it's still one of the strongest. It's an actual leading one. It's one that has a whole lot of promise consistently. So I have a lot of bullishness about where it could go if they would just not have these ridiculous valuations before putting the cart before the horse.
On the companies when they're so young. Bill Joy, what about issues here of scale and speed? The country's been watching the entire U.S. auto industry literally on the verge of collapse. And the economy in such a crisis, they might say, well, yeah, green tech sounds great and bioscience, bravo, and IT and all the rest, but can it bring a wave of growth on a scale and in a time frame to address the crisis the country is in now, Bill?
Well, it's about energy sustainability and resource sustainability. Let's leave resources, materials to the side. Energy is a $6 trillion industry worldwide. The whole information technology industry and all of its ramifications is maybe a sixth that size. So this is a much bigger opportunity. All that has to be decarbonized because of the climate crisis. And we believe that the renewable and sustainable uses here are going to be cheaper. So there's an economic imperative and a climate imperative for revolutionizing a six times larger industry. So that's why we're so excited. You know, I got involved in the Internet in 1975, and I switched, you know, in 2005 to work on this. And this is way more exciting than the whole IT and digital and network revolution that I had the fortune to be a part of. But it's keeping us very busy, and it's going to be a whole new world economy based on these new renewable energy and renewable resources.
Stephen Levy, you've been covering high-tech for a long time. Do you feel a new sort of scale of ambition here and excitement around moving not just into IT, which is vast, and computers vast in their own right, but moving on into energy itself? I mean, when you talk about alternative energy sources, then you're getting up to Saudi scale and right beyond potentially. That's a big new horizon, Steve.
Well, Bill's absolutely right, but I want to go back to IT for a minute here. We're really not done at all there, and one thing that can happen, and people are hoping Obama's going to speed this up, is that we've really neglected to, on a policy level nationally, to help this industry there. There's well over 20% of the country that can't get broadband at all. They can't participate in any significant way in this revolution. And our cell phone structure is, you know, really way behind the rest of the world. I'm in Palo Alto, the center of the connected world. But because I'm staying at a friend's place, or I'm just using my cell phone, I had to schlep over to Stanford University to be on the show. Mm. Well, Bill Joy's out there in the North Sea, and he's talking there. So, you know, we have to really have an initiative to give the country faster broadband, more pervasive broadband. It has to be affordable, like they have in Korea and Japan and other countries. And I think we're going to see a huge payback if we do that.
And it's an internet connection we've got, voice connection, with Bill Joy there on his yacht in the North Sea right now. Let's take our callers in here from Morrisville, Vermont. Steve, you're on the air with Bill Joy, Steve Levy, Kara Swisher. What do you say, Steve?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to. I run a small nonprofit arts organization, which may seem sort of out of the main topic, but in the last year and a half or 2 years, all these new technologies have allowed us to just run our little organization much more efficiently. So that's my first point. My second point is we've seen, just by watching the metrics for our website, we've seen a big increase in people browsing to our website using small screens, so like iPhones and iPod touches. So those are my two points. I'm bullish with the rest of your panel there, and I think tech makes the rest of industry more efficient.
So it's working for you and working in your world. Kara Swisher, in economic downturns, is adoption of new technology and purchasing of technology also sort of equivalently down, or do people buy for the efficiency?
You know, it's a cliche to say in Silicon Valley, but Google was started in the last downturn, and it's kind of a big company. It's kind of an important company.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a lot. I think Sun was started in a downturn. The idea is that it's astonishing. We now have, in a very short amount of time, think about it, flat screens. We have computers that are ubiquitous. We have these handheld computers. Now we're moving into touch, the idea of touch screens or gesture screens. I mean, it's a constant movement forward, and I think that people, it's not a lot of, you called it baubles. A lot of this stuff is, you need it to survive.
I was talking specifically about iPods and iPhones, and maybe we do, but they also were pretty fun, in a way, baubles of a bubble time, weren't they?
It's not. Why is a smart handheld mobile computer a bauble? It's not. It's something you use to communicate. You're going to use it for location. You're going to use it. You know, people in India use these things to set prices because before they were lied to by the people who were buying. Now they can get actual real-time prices. It changes. It changes a lot of things. These things, these handheld computers, it's not Star Trek what's going on. It's information being delivered to people anywhere in the world in these incredibly smart, small packages that are getting easier and easier to use. I mean, Palm introduced another yesterday that's very cool looking. And it's not just for playing. I mean, right now, obviously, a really important thing on the iPhone is this iFart application. There's going to be a lot of silliness. But, you know, there is also a lot of all sorts of anything you could think of that is moving around with you. The idea of it within 5 years is really kind of astonishing. What's being delivered, you know, the power that's being delivered into people's hands.
On that,
and it has lots of societal implications, for
on,
sure.
On that itty-bitty piece of technology with a great big reach right out of your hand, that's true. Let's go to Virginia Beach, Virginia. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a lot of these products, and I've bought two iMacs, probably 10 iPods, an iPhone, two of those iTouches. I have a big family. And so for us at least, yes, we're not buying any more of these things for quite a while. But my question really is this. Do any of the technology companies have any plans to do any serious skills training for, say, the trades, you know, carpentry, plumbing, things that people can actually do in this downturn, skills that they can learn? And I'll take my answer off the air. I have many, many boys in my household, and they could really use this.
Mary, let me just ask you, why not think in terms of them, I don't know, building iPods? Why plumbing instead?
Well, because an iPod, even though Ms. Swisher doesn't agree with this, is a luxury. An operating toilet, at least in this country, is not necessarily.
Yeah.
I just feel like as the economy crunches down farther, and I happen to be one of those people that feels like this really is serious, you know, you need daily trades. I believe that many of the young people who are going to college right now could probably better their lives by actually learning some kind of trades, you know, maybe manual labor trades. And I think that the technology companies have just overlooked the biggest opportunity in the world in not gearing all this stuff towards an educational way, you know, whether it's learning history or learning how to fix a toilet. I just feel like they could make it attractive. They've made all these gadgets attractive to so many people. They could do this if they wanted to.
Mary, let us take it. You're great. Let us take it with your 10 iPods there from Virginia Beach to the North Sea. Bill Joy, you hear Mary. She wants technology or training or industry that is, you know, real jobs in this country, daily trades, she says. Do you see, training aside, and we'll come to it, but the kind of jobs, the kind of industrial expansion you're talking about, will it produce those hands-on, good-wage jobs in this country, or is it just brain power here and jobs in China?
No, in fact, what we need to make our country more energy efficient, we need to retrofit better insulation in people's houses. We also need, those are field jobs. We also need manufacturing jobs, manufacturing solar panels and other kinds of new renewable energy sources. And we need all the R&D that goes around with this. You know, we currently burn about almost 200 billion gallons a year of fuel. We believe that by 2020, we could be making that fuel from cellulose in the United States instead of sending all that money overseas. It's going to take $500 billion of new capital equipment to do that. It'll take some innovation. It'll create a lot of jobs. So all those kind of jobs can come from the decarbonization and Americanization of our energy supply and making ourselves more efficient.
And, you know, I just got a great new idea for a startup is to train out-of-work journalists to do installation of insulation.
Right, great. They'll be up in the attic rolling out the Owens Corning. Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe not too quick. What about sales of those? You heard Mary's got 10 iPods. Now the economy's down. Kara may be right. You can do an awful lot with that lovely piece of tech in your hand. But what about the sales, Steve? Are they still up?
Go ahead. Sorry, Stephen. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Well, the iPod sales are, they're not growing like they used to. That's why a lot of people are waiting for a refresh. But one thing that the iPod revolution, as it were, has brought us is actually a big education push. A lot of colleges now routinely do videos or tapes of all the lectures, and you can get them on iTunes and or podcasts and listen to them. And I would bet that there are podcasts to help plumbers learn their trades that you can get hold of, and there probably are an element in training these for these jobs.
Stephen Levy, Kara Swisher, and Bill Joy there in the North Sea. Please stand by. We have to take a short break. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Apple, Steve Jobs, and American innovation. Bill Joy is with us, co-founder of Sun Microsystems, a partner at the venture capital firm Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers. He's on his good ship Ethereal with his wife doing trial runs in the North Sea, docked as he speaks to us in Holland. Kara Swisher is with us from Las Vegas and the Consumer Electronics Show there running through Sunday. She's co-executive editor of All Things Digital, Dow Jones website devoted to technology, the internet, and the media. Her articles also appear, of course, in the Wall Street Journal's website. And Stephen Levy is with us, senior writer at Wired Magazine, author of Insanely Great, The Life and Times of Macintosh, the Computer That Changed Everything. Let's go to Marsh in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Marsh, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the underlying economics of this. And there has been, over the last 20, 30 years, this fascination with technology as an economic engine. And I think people who actually study it and look at it historically and so on have a much more nuanced view than just simply if we have new technologies, we're going to get ourselves out of a recession. If you look at the way a capitalist economy works, the fundamental thing is that what is produced has to be purchased and consumed. And that implies that, in turn, structure of income is such that you're generating demand to purchase what's consumed.
Okay.
One thing that mainstream economists just assume, if you look at almost any textbook, is that people want to consume more and more and more. But I think historically that's not true. And certainly people don't consume unless there's something that compels them to consume in certain ways. I mean, we for example, probably 90% of your listeners, if polled, would say they would rather go to work each day on convenient public transportation. But all of us, probably less than 10%, are actually taking public transportation because it's just not there.
But Marshall, let me ask you, isn't technology a way to maybe get out of this cycle of productions necessarily meaning consuming some great big hunk of iron or chunk of wood? I mean,
Certainly. But here's the point, is that if you look historically at periods of economic growth, they have involved clusters of technologies. Generally, and universally, they have involved communications technologies, typically things like canals, railroads, streetcar lines, automobiles, jumbo jets, and information technology. And all of these technologies have, besides the characteristic that they are communications technologies, they have had an impact on the geography of the built environment, where people live, where people work, suburbanization, movement west, and things like that.
Yeah, Marsh, I think we've got the perspective. Maybe there's a new geography that goes beyond built environment, but Bill Joy is listening to all this from Holland. Bill, you hear this note of skepticism on technology as the economic savior here, and maybe the sense in Marsh's observations that there's a paradigm that's run out here. What do you make of the angle, Bill?
Well, to speak specifically about the green technologies, today we take oil out of the ground and put it in the atmosphere. We can't continue to afford to do that for either economic reasons or climate reasons, and we need new ways of doing that. And those industries and technologies are going to get created somewhere, and the things that do that are going to be made somewhere. We think it should be in the United States, but we're only going to hit what we aim at. We've got to try to do that innovation in America. Today, most of the advanced batteries in the world aren't made in America, but we think they can and should be, and we think those jobs can and should be in America. We've had a hollowing of our manufacturing base from 20% of our economy down to closer to 10% of our economy. We have to bring the manufacturing back, but by manufacturing new things where we can be the best. And that's the future of growth for American jobs. There can be jobs in IT and in the life sciences as well, but the biggest new industries are going to be the ones that replace the oil industry and the coal industry with renewable energy. And replace inefficient things with efficient things.
Yeah.
And do more with less. That's where the growth is going to come from. It's going to be in Europe or in China, unless we do it, because they're more committed to it right now from a policy standpoint than America has been because of the policies of the Bush administration.
Kara, do you feel in Silicon Valley a sense of bringing on a path toward production and consumption that's not so hard on the planet because it's not so material-based?
Oh,
No question. I mean, a lot of it's a little bit of talking right now, but the fact of the matter is, if you just think about it, I mean, power supply is an important part of all this computing, all these computer issues. The idea of what batteries, the idea of no wires on the you can have a table where you put things down and they charge. Get sort of the idea of wires and electrical consumption. It's a massive idea if you think about it, the idea that we don't have wires on our devices, which, you know, I have 103 wires right now at this point. The efficiencies of knowing when you're not home to turn off the heat, to turn off the lights. I mean, a lot of the way we're going to save energy to deal with this energy crisis is conservation and the ability to know. And computing can really help that. You know, when roads are too jammed, so you don't sit there and use up gas on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of implications, and we should be making them in this country. We should be doing these things in this country. And if we lead the world in this, as we should, it could sort of herald in an entirely new era that is not buying more things. I mean, the iPhone is not everyone should have an iPhone. Of course, it's a luxury device, but the concept of an iPhone, of information in your hand, the concept of knowing that you can turn off lights or which way to go, and healthcare, the implications on healthcare, which is the biggest drag on our economy and the biggest cost. You know, think about it. You start to think about the uses of this computing power, and that's what's most important. And again, as Bill said, the U.S. should lead in this area rather than. We've led so far in the entire internet revolution, which has been really quite astonishing. If you do think about it, if you get away
Absolutely.
From the silliness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to lead in the power consumption alone is an amazing area to be dominant in. And again, yes, you can make car companies can be making these things rather than making, you know, SUVs nobody wants anymore, or some people want but shouldn't want. Kind
yep.
of thing, can't
let, let us go to Mark in Watertown, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It's a real honor to have your panelists there, especially Bill Joy. Just want to say I'm someone who worked in the technology field for 20 years, and then, like a lot of people, was actually a refugee from that field, and I now make my living in the music industry. But one quick point I wanted to make that is a bullish on this question is just that I think there's a vast number of people out there that were working in the IT area maybe a decade ago that have essentially gone into hibernation, and there's a great
why, Mark?
Well of innovation waiting out there to kind of come back into the industry that I think's been waiting for the right conditions.
Why hibernation? There weren't enough jobs?
Well, I think that part of what happened is that when the great internet crash or internet meltdown happened in the early 2000s, part of what was driving all of the enthusiasm was a sense of potential with the e-marketplaces and the other innovations that the internet revolution seemed to offer.
Yep.
But at that time, it was not tied to the real concerns of, say, the green technology revolution in a very direct way. I remember thinking about it at that time, and that connection was just not being made by people. And now what I see, and this is really the point I wanted to make, is that people see the potential of this green revolution, and they're aware that IT is going to have to play a part in that. But what I see with some of the books, like I just read Thomas Friedman's Hot, Flat, and Crowded,
mm-hmm.
where he puts forth this very visionary view of the energy internet, using information technology to help do real-time arbitrage of the best way to get your energy from a particular source. But I think there's a much more direct and more immediate use for IT, and that is to create a structure so that the trade-offs that people need to make in terms of buying decisions or investing in new technologies, IT could really play a big part in making that information available to people. And I love the opinion from your panelists on the potential they see there.
Mark,
kind of like almost a financial market, as it were, about energy innovations, new energy products, and doing kind of real-time trade-off analysis to help industrial buyers make decisions about investments in technology.
Let us pick it straight up. And, Mark, thanks for calling. Bill Joy, how about it? Do you feel like you're straddling with your IT background when you look at the green revolution, or do you see convergence in the kind of, building on one another that Kara and our caller Mark are describing?
Well, the boat I'm on, which we built as a green tech demonstration project, has an energy internet on board, and we can use it, and we probably gain 10 or 15% efficiency from that.
What is an energy internet, Bill?
Well, that means that we have a control system that understands all the producers and consumers of power, and we have a battery bank energy store, and we can use that to run our engines and other sources of electricity more efficiently. So by using the most cost-effective sources and running generators at their optimum load point, it's kind of like a Prius would do for a car. We have a power system that's about 10 times the size of what a Prius does. But what we also do is we more generally just do energy efficiency, and we in fact save a factor of 2 from that. So while the energy internet is important, and we have to build a super smart super grid, we also have to get more efficient. And there's more money. There's actually more money laying on the ground from efficiency that we're just throwing away than the grid. So all these things are good. The best buy is just to insulate your house, actually. There's all sorts of other things you can do. You can use pretty soon LED lighting instead of even compact fluorescent or incandescent. That saves a huge amount of energy. Use laptops instead of desktops. That saves energy, right? And on and on.
On and on indeed. We've got more questions for you there. Bruce in Newington, New Hampshire. You're on the air with Bill, Kara, and Stephen Levy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
The implicit assumption of this show is that technology will get us out of all of these problems.
Well, we're asking,
technological progress forward is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one could argue that so far many of our problems actually result from technology. And in particular, Mr. Joy wrote a fascinating article about why the future doesn't need us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the assumptions there was that technology basically, we were going to end up working for technology. And that AI and that all of those things were going to actually, that there was a serious danger that artificial intelligence and computers would actually end up running us. And I'm just curious, in the most general sense, is our faith in technology misplaced? And, I mean, is there really a huge danger?
Bruce, our time is short. Let me put it to Bill. April 2000, Bill Joy, you wrote in Wired magazine that famous article, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. Have you come back around? You hear our caller's concern.
No, I remain concerned. In fact, our partnership created a pandemic and biodefense venture fund, identified the danger of epidemic of flu that we wouldn't have any antivirals for, and that's why we invested in an antiviral that is, we think, better than Tamiflu, because we do need these defenses. So, but we also have a climate crisis, and we have to try to deal with that as well. So we need the information technology to enable and empower innovators. We also need to go attack the specific inefficiencies and the causes of the climate crisis, just carbon sources and inefficiency that causes us to use more of them. So that's the short-term problem. Longer term, we have to deal with how we manage really powerful technology. So all these things, we're very, very long on problems right now, and we got to engage youth and educate people and get to work.
Let's go to Severn in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Severn, you're on the air.
Hi. My question was, well, I'm pretty much going to bring it back to the beginning of the topic with Steve Jobs. And it seems like since the beginning of his tenure at Apple, when he, beginning with the introduction of OS X and then going on to iPhone and iTunes and, iPhone and so on.
After his return in 97,
It seems like there's been a lot of focus on Steve Jobs' performance. And I remember this year there were reports that his health was not doing that well, and while reports of his demise were greatly exaggerated, I remember that Apple took a bit of a hit. And now with his exclusion from Macworld, it seems like the question is shifting more to when rather than if he's not going to be having the reins at Apple. And I was just wondering, what kind of impact would you see? Because a lot of this technology with the IT world has been focused between Google and Mac and Sun and Microsoft. So I was just wondering, what kind of impact could this have on the future of IT?
Severn, thanks for calling. Stephen Levy, I'll bring that straight to you. If Steve Jobs is stepping back, we don't know yet. Maybe he won't at all. But if that's the way it goes, what about the impact?
Well, it's interesting to think about this. Even though that Steve is in his early 50s, Bill Gates essentially retired from Microsoft this year. He moved on.
Right.
And the fact is that it is inevitable. That even Rupert Murdoch and Sumner Redstone and these other people get old and they leave their companies, or frankly, they get old and die. I mean, it is inevitable that one day Steve Jobs will not be running Apple, whether it's in a year or let's hope maybe 20 years. So the question is, how do you build your values into a company, and the best part of what you have to offer is sustained after you're no longer with the company? And I think the way to evaluate Apple is to say, I think that a lot of what Steve brought to Apple, he has built in to some degree. Of course, Apple's better off with him, but it's a better company now going on.
Well, values into a company, values into a country or economy. We thank all three of you for the insights on each of those tiers in this hour. It's really been interesting. Stephen Levy at Wired Magazine, it's always great to have you. Thanks for very much for being with us this hour, Stephen.
Thank you.
And Kara Swisher in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. Kara, you're great. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Bill Joy, co-founder of Sun Microsystems on the good ship Ethereal off the coast of Holland. Bill Joy, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.